revolution. Well, you know, we all can vote to change the world. Ron Paul supports the Constitution. Well, you know, we all can vote to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?
Don't you know it's gonna be
all right? Says he's got a real solution. Well, you know, we sure all love Ron's plan. You ask me for a contribution. Well, you know, we're doing all we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hang, I can tell you this, brother, you have to wait.
Don't you know it's gonna be
all right? All right. All right. Constitution, well, you know, we all just have to change some minds. He tells us it's our Constitution, well, you know, you better have freedom in your mind, he says. But if you go carrying pictures of Ron Paul now, you're gonna make it with us anyhow.
Don't you know it's gonna be
all right? All right. All right.
Hi, I'm Stephen Vincent. Thank you very much for joining us today for this edition of The Freedom Message. Today we're joined by Ralph Fusatola, who is a health freedom expert, and he's going to help us understand the health freedom issues that Ron Paul has been working on, including the Health Freedom Protection Act that the congressman has submitted to Congress. Today we also will be covering the Mukasey confirmation. We'll be looking at some of the latest news appearances by Ron Paul. Okay, and all right, and we'll also be looking at a new television advertisement that Ron Paul has on in New Hampshire, and we'll start with looking at some email responses to Jack Cafferty on his show, and he'll be, this is responses to his question to viewers about Ron Paul from a couple of days ago. So let's go ahead and start out with that.
in New York. Question this hour is Ron Paul's candidacy for president getting the attention that it should. Every time we mention this guy's name, it's phenomenal the amount of email we get. I mean, you guys just light it up, and no other candidate gets that kind of response. Granted, he's got a lot of following on the internet, but it's still big numbers. Hassam in San Francisco, Ron Paul's not going to be elected simply because his policies won't make billions for the corporations who rule this country. Brad in Florida writes, of course his campaign's not getting the attention it deserves. The media wouldn't hear of it. The thing about Paul is that he's getting a lot of support from people of varied political perspectives. I'm a Democrat, and I'd vote for him over Clinton any day. Heck, I even sent him $25. People want change, and the front runners aren't going to deliver. Joe in Wisconsin, it absolutely isn't. He wins every post-debate poll. I see his and only his signs all over my city. He sets fundraising records. But alas, the media want Rudy versus Hillary, so his campaign's already dead in the water. Pathetic. Our voice means nothing. William in Rockford, Illinois, I would have to say no. I've seen very little coverage about him to even form an opinion. Matthew in New Hampshire writes, unless Gore is drafted, this Democrat may just vote for Ron Paul. He has all the right answers and seems to be devoid of the manure that so fills his fellow candidates. Think about that sentence for a minute. Chaz in Texas, Ron Paul's my congressman here in Texas, should be a hell of a lot more well-known than he is. He is a true man of the people, takes no corporate money, is the most accessible politician I've ever heard of. I'm a Democrat, but I'll be voting in the Republican primary so I can vote for Ron Paul. And David in Mississippi writes, at this stage of the game, I would vote for Ron Paul, George, or Ringo, as long as the Republican Party and Bush are out of the White House.
Wolf? I love our emailers, Jack. Thanks very
much. That's great,
isn't it? And to our viewers, you're in the Situation Room. Happening now, grave new developments unfolding in Pakistan's state of emergency. The country's courts are now closed with judges and lawyers, virtual prisoners of the president. Olive, an exclusive interview coming up on Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul.
Okay, so I like what Jack Cafferty does with his show, and I like the fact that he gives people the opportunity to speak via his comments on his email comments section. So let's go ahead and watch some an appearance by Congressman Paul on Kudlow today.
Has not only raised a quick $7 million over the internet in just a couple of days, people's money is being stolen. People who have saved, they're being robbed. I mean, if you have devaluation of the dollar at 10%, people have been robbed of 10%. It's going to lead to higher interest rates and a weaker economy.
All right, joining me now, the aforementioned presidential candidate, Texas Congressman, Mr. Ron Paul. Ms. Paul, welcome back to the program, sir. Seldom have I beef with Ben Bernanke.
Well, my big beef is that nobody looks at the cause of our problems, and the cause comes from the Federal Reserve creating too much credit and distorting the markets. And everybody bugs the Fed, all the congressmen, everybody else, and Wall Street says, you know, what we need is more money, lower the interest rates. And nobody asks, how do you lower interest rates? Well, you do that by creating too much credit.
What specifically would you like to see Mr. Bernanke do right now?
Well, I said he was between the rock and the hard place, and he is. That nobody, what he does is going to be wrong because we need a new monetary system. In the meantime, you know, if he inflates, he destroys the value of the dollar. He destroys the value of the dollar. We get inflation. We get a weak economy. So there is new money he creates out of thin air, because eventually this will just lead to loss of confidence in the dollar, international exchange market, and that's exactly what's happened here in the last month or so, the dollar is going down sharply, and it's because we're resorting to inflation.
Well, you're quite right about the dollar going down. Let me ask you, in terms of a new monetary system, and without question, you're the dollar to be gold backed again? Would you like to go back to fixed exchange rates? Give us a sense of where you'd like to.
Well, we should follow the law, and the law is the Constitution. The Constitution said that only gold and silver should be legal tender. We don't really have clear authority to have a central bank. Jefferson and Jackson got rid of a national bank because they didn't like it. We've only had a around the world all the time. But why can't we have gold and silver competing as a currency and let people save? Get the taxes on currency. You can't tax money. So there's a way to develop a competing currency under the current situation. And if people don't like the fiat currency that continually loses its value, they can opt out and start dealing in gold and silver.
Are you going to make that prize winner? Are you going to make this part of your campaign?
I have in the past, and I will continue to do it. Hayek actually would allow the marketplace to develop the competing currencies, and I think that's not a bad idea either. So I sort of support the Hayekian and viewpoint, but even with the government involved, they could change the tax laws and allow than anybody does, but I have to say that the road to serfdom had a lot of influence on me in my early years.
Indeed, the Constitution of Liberty as well for me. Let me go to your phenomenal fundraising story in our remaining moments, sir. It is reported that you've raised up to $7 million in the new fiscal quarter, almost all of that on the internet. It is a
some individual in Florida I have not met nor have I talked to. I surely need to thank him. But he's 37 years old, never been in politics in his life. He raised, what was it? 4.4 or 3.4 or whatever budget, and also a foreign policy that makes a lot more sense than what we have.
You're going to put this money?
It's going into what the people sent it for. Organized campaign.
In these upcoming ads with all this money, what would your central message be, sir?
The message people out of Social Security and the kids on campus is applaud loudly for that. But I tell them the only way we can do that is we have to save money somewhere. And
instead of running as a third-party candidate, either as an independent candidate or as you have in the past, run as a libertarian.
Thank you.
All right, next up are also.
Great. So a very nice interview with Dr. Paul there on Kudlow. He was asking some pretty nice open-ended questions, pretty much just opened some doors for the doctor to walk through. We're certainly seeing a shift in the establishment media in the last couple of days. All new respect for Dr. Paul, all new respect for the Ron Paul campaign and the Ron Paul movement. Very encouraging. And I think that we have cause to be optimistic about the future of the campaign and the future of this election cycle. So I would like to introduce to you our next guest, Mr. Ralph Fusitola. And Mr. Fusitola is with globalhealthfreedom.org. He has a website and a law practice dedicated towards health freedom issues and law. And he has been active on the legislative front, assisting in the drafting of health freedom legislation, and has interacted with the Ron Paul campaign as well on various levels with regards to health freedom. So we're very pleased to have Mr. Fusitola together with us today. And let's see. So now this is going to be the first time that we've had a guest on camera, on video, on this show. As you know, this is beta software. We anticipate that everything is going to work fine, but we're going to see how it goes, and we thank you for being with us today. Ralph, are you able to hear us now?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, great, and we can hear Ralph. So, folks, again, this is Mr. Ralph Fusitola. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Freedom Message.
Okay, thank you, Steve, for having me.
Good. So what were your observations about the last piece that we saw of Ron Paul?
Well, you know, I've been a supporter of Ron Paul's for, since the mid-1970s, when I was a member of the National Committee to re-legalize gold. That was one of Ron Paul's first great successes in politics.
Okay. And because I asked you to mute yourself earlier. Yeah. And that didn't work. But now, and you turned it back on again.
Fine.
Okay. So here we are back again. So somehow we had a problem getting Ralph's audio out there. So we're just going to go ahead and speak with him in this way. So go ahead, Ralph, and continue with what you were saying.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Can
you? They'll be able to hear you now.
Very good. Okay. All right. As I was saying, we go back to the original drafting of the Constitution, the start of the federal government. not the start of the American Union, because as you know, the American Union came into being decades before the Constitution of 1787. In fact, in a very real sense, the federal government that we now enjoy came into existence as the Third Republic, the Third American Republic. Well, that Third American Republic does have a constitution, and Ron Paul is one of its great defenders. And in that constitution, there's a list of the powers of Congress. And when the Constitution was written, there was a proposal to give Congress the power to set legal tender, to decide what was money. And the Constitutional Convention voted to remove that language from the Constitution of the United States and instead put in the language that's there today, which says no state may make anything but gold and silver legal tender. Now, you have to understand it in historical context. During the American Revolution, the Continental Congress, the first American Republic, printed up so much fake or funny money, some paper money, that the saying came into existence in America, you know, not worth a continental. The continental dollars became worthless. Some people suggest that one of the reasons for adopting the Constitution of 1787 was to secure the repayment of those paper dollars, and a number of people made a lot of money on that repayment. But nonetheless, there was a Constitution, there was a government, and for 100 and some odd years, gold was money, silver was money, and nobody in authority tried to pretend that something else was legal tender. And then during the Civil War, in order to pay for burning down Richmond and Atlanta, I guess killing 500,000 Americans is expensive, the federal government issued its greenbacks with the famous line on it, "This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private." And since there was a Union army ravaging the countryside, people sort of accepted that. At the end of the war, however, there were a number of lawsuits brought against people who were trying to pay off their debts with this paper money. And the lawsuit said, "I contracted to be paid in gold. You can't give me this paper." And the courts held, all the way up to the Supreme Court, the so-called legal tender cases, and the Supreme Court said very clearly, federal government has no power to set legal tender, and only gold and silver can be legal tender under our Constitution. The reaction by the victors in the war to that proper Supreme Court decision, based on law and on the Constitution, was to increase the size of the Supreme Court. The rump Congress, a Congress representing only two-thirds of the states, because one-third of the states were under military occupation, that rump Congress increased the size of the Supreme Court, and they appointed two new members to the court, one of whom is the scion of the famous banking family. Well, the Supreme Court reheard the legal tender cases, and the Supreme Court never rehears cases, but it reheard the legal tender cases, and it decided, there is something inherent in sovereignty. Here we go again. Whenever the court or the president wants to claim a power that it doesn't really have, they always find it inherent in sovereignty. So instead of a government of limited power as expressed clearly in the Constitution, we have a sovereignty that has no limits to its power. And that, of course, is really what the Ron Paul Revolution is about undoing. So the court issued its decision, and the constitutional money was abolished for a while. Curiously enough, however, as part of the compromise in 1876 that gave the Republicans the presidency and got the Union Army out of the South, the greenbacks began to be redeemed for gold. And within a few years, there were no legal tender notes again. In fact, there were no really legal tender notes until the beginning of World War I, the dawning of the Federal Reserve System, a generation or more later. And when these new greenbacks were issued by the Federal Reserve System, no one challenged it. It was settled law.
Yeah.
At that point, and that's really the history of what happened to our dollar and why, for the 100 years before the Federal Reserve, the U.S. dollar was worth its weight in gold,
well,
$20 an ounce.
We're certainly seeing a new stage in that history right now as the dollar plunges into oblivion. It's
already plunged.
Yeah,
it's in the process. It lost 97% of its value in the first 97 years.
Yeah,
Fed's history.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing it unfold right now before our eyes. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and play a clip for people another news clip, and we're going to go ahead and fix your microphone because I think it's just a setting that we need to change in your I believe so, and we're going to go ahead and see if we can do that while we play a clip here. So, folks, we're going to go ahead and cue up for you another piece of news. Ron Paul with Wolf Blitzer this morning, and enjoy this while we get Ralph's microphone and video up.
Ron Paul raised a record breaking $4.2 million on Monday for more than 35,000 individual donors, all thanks to his dedicated army.
$1.5 million this quarter, and over half of that raised online on November. Fundraising date, a fundraising drive, dreamed up by volunteers, these online pool supporters that you'll find, told me there was no overall organization, just a lot of people pitching in. Well, if you go back to the forums today, that they're not giving up. There might be more to come. They're discussing dates for other fundraising drives there, Veterans One. But it looks like the weekend of December 16th, the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, is another, a webpage already.
I can only say congratulations. It's really an unbelievable thing that you've achieved right now. First of all, what do you attribute this amazing financial support within 24 hours?
Well, it is amazing, and I don't claim a whole lot for it. I think we have a very good platform that's very appealing to the people who care about what's happening in this country. I think we're also tapping into strong message, strong disaffection of what's happening here in this country. I happen to be there, and the grassroots have really put this together. So it's a grassroots effort, and I think that makes it even stronger.
Way behind the top tier. How do you plan on using this new cash to try to challenge Julian Thompson, McCain, Romney, some of the others?
Well, the money was sent to us to be spent, and we will be spending it. We've sent a few more people. I know the other campaigns have had huge staffs, but I think they waste a lot of their money. But now we are getting multiple staffing positions, and we're spending the money in many ways in an ordinary way, but we will continue with this grassroots effort that has been ongoing here on the internet.
Are you going to support Nancy Pelosi's trying to get a timeline in there? Are you going to support that?
No, not really, because I think that's ducking the issue. As long as you're funding the war, you're supporting the war, and it's been going on for all these years. I didn't support it before the war, and I haven't supported any money for the war. I support the troops. The troops should come home. And amazingly, I get more money from the troops than any other candidate.
But so let me interrupt you, Chuck.
$600 billion in the pipeline. We have all the money we need to bring the troops home, and that's the best way to protect the troops. They're not going to run out of money. The money is there. This is all fluff for expanding the war and plan on war going into Iran, all these things. So there's no shortage of funds to get the troops out.
All the other Republican candidates, could you support him as the Republican nominee?
Well, I've been asked that question a lot, and I can't have a candidate that will contradict everything I've stood for 30 years. The supporters I have couldn't make any sense out of that. You know, if they change their policy and say that they are now supporting bringing the troops home and ending the war, which on occasion, you know, politicians do
Thompson or Romney McCain, somebody who supports the president's strategy in Iraq, gets it. What do you do? Do you run as a third-party libertarian, for example, which you've done in the past, back in, what, 1988?
No intention of doing that. We have a very biased system here in this country against democracy really working. It's hard. Exactly what I'm doing, and as long as we have this expansion of our campaign and this funds just rolling in, without us doing very much, I better stick to my guns and what I'm doing right now.
Sorry, but I can assume from your answer, therefore, if you don't.
Plan B is I am still running for Congress in Texas. I'm allowed to run for both. So, yes, I would be glad if my people vote for me to stay in the Congress.
We've done some checking of your record, and it's amazing, Congressman, you know this, on so many pieces of legislation, you are the only member of the House, Democrat or Republican, that's opposed some legislation. You were the one, a bill calling on Vietnam to release political prisoners, 425-1, you were the one, condemning the Robert Mugabe violence against Zimbabwe, citizens, 421-1, you were the one, awarding a gold medal to Rosa Parks. We could go on. Why tell us, explain why you, so
the only strict constitutionalist, because I look at that from the Constitution, it's not that I'm against what they're proposing. It's just interference, unnecessary. Carry that to the next step of that resolution between, condemning the... Yeah, just think of the chaos that created. Getting ourselves involved in some event 100 years ago, it's meddling where we shouldn't, and it usually leads to trouble. It's much more troublesome than look at what the chaos it's caused between Turkey and the Kurds.
The leader that all of us are quite familiar with.
Well, that wasn't easy for me, because I think she's a real hero, because I believe in civil disobedience, and I believe peaceful changes come about that way. But I was dealing with the money. Why should I attack you to get money?
Congressman Ron Paul has become a phenomenon.
Okay, so there was yet another very positive piece of television coverage of Dr. Paul. Again, we've been seeing a definite trend towards improved, more open-ended, more open-minded coverage on the Ron Paul campaign and Congressman Paul. So we have, Mr. Ralph Fusatola with us, and we may have fixed his microphone problem, so we're going to give that a try. If not, then you'll be able to see me and hear him, but not see him and hear him at the same time. So we're going to go and transition back to Ralph Fusatola and speak with him about health freedom and the Ron Paul campaign. Good. So we're back on right. my camera now, and I'm just going to double check.
All right. Can you hear me?
Testing 1, 2. Okay.
So, all right. Can you hear me?
Okay. They can hear us now. So we're going to have to stick
Excellent.
With we're going to have to stick with my camera, and we'll figure out what happened with yours at a later date. So
on my camera, it interferes with the audio.
It's tough to say. Here we are living on the bleeding edge. It's a fun and exciting place to be, but it can also be vexing at times when technology doesn't work for any apparent reason that you can deduce. Ralph and I will figure out. Ralph is actually going to be appearing as a weekly guest, a 15-minute spot once a week, as our health freedom update. So let's go ahead and get into the health freedom issues and give folks a little bit of background on how you got involved in the health freedom issues and take it from there.
Okay, absolutely. I began practicing law 34 years ago. My friends Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw were just beginning to write their books on life extension, and they very much got us involved in the nutrient world. I remember back the days when you'd have to buy bottles of selenium and carefully mix your own vitamin mixtures, and of course the vitamin world has changed quite a bit since then, since the 1970s. And instead, we've gone through this wonderful period of growth that was ushered in by what's called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which was adopted in 1994. I was one of the people who helped lobby for that act, and it basically allowed people to start to make truthful statements about nutrients. And as a result of that, the nutrient industry has grown very dramatically, about $1 billion a year in 1994, about $28 billion in 2005. So a lot of Americans are voting with their dollars to be allowed to use very high potency nutrients as part of an overall approach to health and well-being. And that's where I got started. I began representing people in the industry. In the late 70s, National Health Federation cited me for my work with people who were seeking alternative cancer therapies.
Well, those...
And I've represented a lot of people over the years in the field. As time went on, I became active in a number of health freedom organizations. I'm now one of the trustees of the Natural Solutions Foundation, and that organization's website is globalhealthfreedom.org. I also operate the legal consulting service through my website, which is vitaminlawyer.com. One word, vitamin lawyer. And I basically work with alternative practitioners and little vitamin companies and try to help people meet the legal requirements and at the same time help defend them against requirements that are unfair.
So let's break it down for people in a nutshell. Basically, when we use the phrase health freedom, we're saying we want to have a situation where people have the freedom to choose the health solutions that they deem are appropriate for them, free of government regulation and intervention. And I think intellectually, and I might play a little bit of devil's advocate here for you, I think intellectually most of us can get our minds around that and accept that. But then you run into a situation, I'm just off the top of my head, I'm thinking fen-phen. Now apparently that was something that really some people had some serious health consequences from taking that particular type of product, and then the FDA intervened and took it off the market. So we have a situation where some people are going to say, hey, health freedom, but don't we need the government to protect us from products that are just flat out unsafe and shouldn't be on the market? Why don't you help us out with that?
Well, basically the first question is, is fen-phen really a food or a dietary supplement? And of course it wasn't. It was really a misbranded drug. And that's a really different category. Health freedom is really about the right of individuals to make their own choices when it comes to their own health care. Part of that is access to high potency vitamins. Part of it is the right to make decisions with the advice of your health care practitioners, not based on political decisions made in Washington, but based on what you think your own needs are. Some of the issues that we face in this area are the issues of forced vaccination and forced medication. We could talk for a while about the failure of the FDA to protect us against dangerous drugs, but that's really a separate issue. And while as a libertarian, I would certainly hold forth that an individual has the right to take a dangerous drug if they choose to, I would want them to know what they were doing and to know that it was a dangerous drug. So I'm very much in favor of honest advertising, of advertisements that are truthful and not misleading. And in a free society, adults have the right to make bad decisions with truthful information. In fact, that's not me saying that. That's the United States Supreme Court in the case of Thompson versus Western States, a landmark case from 2002, which really flies directly in the face of the bureaucracy that's attempting to dictate our health choices.
So is it the role of the government then to ensure that we are getting truthful information? Is that the argument of the health freedom proponents?
I don't think that the government is supposed to be ensuring anything like that. I don't think that that's the role of government at all. The marketplace is where decisions like that get made. Bureaucrats are notoriously unable to make those decisions in any rational manner. I think that the normal way that truth in advertising is policed in our society through lawsuits and through acts such as that. Attorney generals sometimes bring those lawsuits, but the principles are basically the same. It's an after-the-fact enforcement. It's not a censorship before the fact. And that's why the Supreme Court said that they have rejected the notion that the government has any interest, I would say legitimate interest, but the legal term interest means legitimate interest.
Well, sure.
Any legitimate interest in preventing people from making what the Supreme Court called bad decisions with truthful commercial information.
Should there be
truthful information.
Should there be
it's a free speech issue.
Should there be commercial and criminal penalties for people who peddle a health product that does cause injury or harm or death to consumers?
Absolutely. If someone is harmed, they should certainly have the right to compensation. That has nothing to do with any government bureaucracy. That has to do with our legal system, our common law, which has been developed over centuries to protect people from being harmed. And in the commercial world, there are principles that have been developed over centuries that make it easier for consumers to be compensated for harm that products cause. But my concern is that people have truthful information to make honest decisions. Now, the Food and Drug Administration, in a notorious position that it took recently at an international meeting, actually, the U.S. delegate actually took the position that because studies have shown that Americans will choose to buy GMO, that's genetically modified organisms, GMO-free foods, if they know that these foods are GMO-free, and because as far as FDA is concerned, there's no difference between natural foods and Frankenfoods, that the FDA doesn't want people making bad decisions. And therefore, they don't want the international community to require people who sell genetically modified products to put that on the label. And they go a step further. They want to forbid people who make genetically modified free foods from telling that truthful information on their labels also. So the consumers are to get no information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that violation of free speech that's at the heart of health freedom. Health freedom is really about free speech, and Ron Paul understands that. He understands it real clearly. And I think one of the ways we can see that is to take a look at the presidential scorecard. Natural Solutions Foundation has sent out a 19-question scorecard to all the candidates for president. And actually, we've done it by asking our people, our health freedom warriors, we call them, the people who are on our e-alert list. There are a couple hundred thousand people on that list. And we send out an e-alert, and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people respond by telling their congressmen and the FDA what they think. And we help that and set that up. And 89,000 messages have gone to the presidential candidates saying, answer these 19 questions. Well, Ron Paul answered the questions. The other candidates, not yet. I guess they need a few hundred thousand more questions before they're going to answer them. But Ron Paul answered them, and here are some of the things he said. We asked very specific questions about health freedom. So, for example, we asked about what's called the CAM guidelines. FDA, back last December 26th, issued a guideline on what they call CAM, complementary and alternative medicine, what we call CAM, complementary and alternative modalities, because it's not medicine. But they issued a guideline to tell people how they can practice massage therapy and acupuncture and all that other good stuff. And they issued it the day after Christmas and didn't bother sending out a press release. I don't know if you have had this experience, but I've never heard of the federal government working on the day after Christmas, but they issued it anyway. And then 2 months later, in the middle of February, they put a notice in the Federal Register. Well, they're legally responsible and required to do that notice, but they waited 2 months to do it, and they didn't bother issuing a press release on that either. And the FDA never misses a chance to issue a press release. I think they thought they were going to sneak it through because what they're trying to do is create a whole new category of products without Congress ever voting on it, so-called CAM products. And Ron Paul said very clearly, I oppose the CAM regulations. I'm quoting exactly from his answers, which he typed into our questionnaire. I oppose the CAM regulation draft guidelines, and I submitted comments to the FDA in opposition to the regulations. I've actually read his comments that he submitted, and they are powerful, strong language about the relationship between physicians and patients, about the right of individuals to choose alternative modalities that do not include physicians and insurance companies and government bureaucrats. And he's very good on that issue. And we asked him about, of course, we asked all the presidential candidates their position on the bill that he's introduced into Congress called the Health Freedom Protection Act. Of course, he proudly says, I introduced the bill. I oppose all FDA actions that in any way infringe on the First Amendment rights of consumers to learn about the health benefits of dietary supplements. Exactly what the Supreme Court said, basically. And as I said, Ron Paul sees this, as I do, as a First Amendment freedom of speech issue. And he talks about, and then we go on to a lot more specifics, we ask about what are called bioidentical hormones, about natural substances that help, like DHEA and progesterone, which help people stay young longer, which help nourish healthy aging, as it were. And he said, the federal government has no constitutional authority to stop Americans from using bioidentical hormones. Mm-hmm. When he asked him about compounding pharmacies, which are pharmacies that mix things together for people to their order. And again, Dr. Paul says, the federal government has no constitutional authority to restrict the operations of compounding pharmacies. So I'm a leading congressional opponent, he says.
I think we can all understand the issue of the federal government not having constitutional authority to prevent us from having certain kinds of information or for classifying certain kinds of products in a way which basically makes them proprietary products of drug companies or takes them off the market and limits our health freedom, literally.
Yes, you do it through economic means.
But now there's the flip side to that, which is when I buy a product, I want to know what's in it. And I want to know whether it's GMO or not. There's information that I do want to have. And currently, the FDA and the government mandates that certain information be listed on products. Now, there's an example of government intervening in the opposite direction.
What happened there was the opposite of that. It was illegal to tell that information until the government legalized it. In a free society, it would not have been illegal to put that information on the labels in the first place, and reputable companies would have honest information on their labels, and disreputable companies would rapidly go out of business in a free market.
So, in other words,
really as another example of the government intervening to undo the interventions of the government.
Well, that would be proof
need government intervention.
That would be ultimately unnecessary because the market can enforce that. For example, if as a consumer I decide, and it's broadly decided, that we want this information, and I pick up product A and I pick up product B, and product A has the information that I need and product B doesn't have the information, product B goes back on the shelf and the product A goes home with me, and that's how I'm gonna get that decision made in the marketplace.
Well, let's go one step further. There are a lot of people who want to put honest information on their labels about not being GMO, about being natural ingredients. FDA says there's no legal difference between a natural vitamin and an artificial vitamin, and you may not say that natural vitamins are better than artificial vitamins. It's another restriction on freedom of speech. And we can go on many, many examples of those First Amendment issues. But there's another major part of health freedom that Ron Paul clearly understands. And that is the issue of international regulations. And it's the so-called harmonization issue. There are a number of international agencies that are attempting to harmonize world regulations to make world trade simpler. But in doing so, they're basically attempting to force Americans to harmonize our freedoms with the restrictions that exist in places like Germany and certain other areas of Europe. And Ron Paul has become the leading spokesperson in opposition to that sort of harmonization. And here's what he says. And we asked some questions about that. We asked him about the Trilateral Cooperation Charter and the North American Union, this attempt by the presidents of Mexico and the United States, with I think a very reluctant Canada being dragged along, to get their various federal bureaucracies, their national bureaucracies, to cooperate and coordinate their activities. And we asked him whether he supports this. And what Ron Paul said is, I am the leading congressional opponent of the North American Union and the Security and Prosperity Partnership, so-called. We asked about, do you support the FDA's policy of harmonization of regulations, of our regulations, which are based on common law freedoms with the regulations of Mexico and Canada? And his answer is, I oppose all efforts to harmonize American law with the law of other countries, and I have taken the lead in working to mobilize congressional opponents to the Trilateral Cooperation Charter. So we asked him, do you support such executive agreements without congressional debate and approval? And he said, no, I do not support allowing the president to erode our freedom and threaten our sovereignty by executive agreement. So these are issues that go beyond the issue of can I buy 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in one capsule or not. These are issues that go to the heart of the power of the federal government and the role of the federal government in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We asked him, what would he do if elected? And his answer is, as president, I will withdraw the United States from the North American Union, the Security Prosperity Partnership, and the Trilateral Cooperation Charter.
And the United Nations.
And that's, as clear as one can be. I oppose harmonization. Centralization of power and control breeds oppression. And I don't know of any person who's been a president of the United States in the past half century who has understood that. A very powerful statement from a man who's obviously thought very deeply about the role of government in our lives. We asked him about the International Food Code, Codex Alimentarius, mm-hmm. which is Latin food code, an interesting agency that we could talk about a little bit. But we asked him about that, and he said, I'm the leading congressional opponent of Codex. And he wants us to stop U.S. participation in Codex.
Why don't we go ahead and tell people a little bit about what Codex Alimentarius is and where it
Let
comes,
me, yeah,
where
let's
it
talk
comes
about
from.
That.
And
well, the roots of Codex actually go back to the beginning of the 20th century. They go back to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And what happened is the empire adopted what was basically an extension of the Napoleonic Code having to do with food, because the empire had many different countries in it, and they needed an overall rule to allow for trade of food among those, between the Czechs and the Slovaks and the Austrians and all. And so they adopted a food code. That food code became the basis for development after World War II. At the end of World War II, and we've documented this, there was a strong movement to consolidate the pharmaceutical industry worldwide. That was led by a number of German industrialists, literally fresh out of Allied internment camps because of their Nazi activities. They became the leaders of the world pharmaceutical industry, and they became the individuals who pursued this creation of a world food code. So in 1963, the World Health Organization and the Food and Agricultural Organization, two primary UN organs, created the Codex Alimentarius. Codex refers to both the Codex Commission and its subcommittees and the body of documents that have been created over the past 40 years. The Codex Statute says the Codex is supposed to be concerned about food safety and about promoting the world food trade, of course, to help prevent, you know, things like famine. What they've done is they've become a captive of the very largest monopolistic international corporations, the types of corporations that come about because of government intervention and maintain their market share because of government favoritism. Those groups have taken it over and have used it to degrade organic standards, to allow toxins into the food supply without putting that information on the labels, to degrade organic standards without putting that information on labels. A lot of things that are labeled organic are no longer really organic, for example. And they've also allowed irradiated food without putting that on the label. And, of course, the great battle now is over GMO food, where at least some of the European countries are refusing to buy into the idea that they should use GMO ingredients without telling people that those ingredients are there. So that's what Codex is up to. Codex, when you go to a Codex meeting, I've gone to Codex meetings. When you go to a Codex meetings, you watch the dance. It's a dance that's led by the U.S. delegate, and the U.S. delegation always has people in it from various major industrial associations. The U.S. delegate wants something, and the EU delegate gets up, and they go back and forth a little bit, and, of course, they've already agreed to it in advance, and so they agree to it, and everyone else keeps quiet.
Now, scaling this up a little bit, there's the argument that you hear, and from what I've been able to gather, it seems like a legitimate argument, that there's a trend afoot nationally, internationally, for food and nutrition to be increasingly monopolized, both the production of food and the entire food chain to be controlled by fewer and fewer corporations. Such that, for example, seeds that are being bioengineered are apparently intended to replace natural seeds, and eventually all the seeds will actually that are used to create the food that we consume will actually be patented and owned by corporations, and you wouldn't be able to actually access or use these without licensing. This
is certainly happening.
Yeah.
And it's a very dangerous trend. I can imagine a situation in which a parasite got released that attacked one of these genetically modified food substances. And we'd find that all the wheat in the world would die off. And it's happening, of course, as we know, to the bees, the pollinating bees. 90% of the bees of the world seem to be dying off, and it seems to be traced directly back to genetically modified organisms. Mm-hmm. But that's and so there's a great danger that by relying on monopoly, and the marketplace never allows monopolies, and so whenever you find monopoly, you find government intervention on some level or other. If we allow this to happen, our species will be vulnerable, very, very vulnerable. And it's a very dangerous situation, and one that goes way beyond the politics of the moment. And it's one that would not happen in a free market.
And we see a reaction to that, to this trend, with the health freedom movement and with the movement, for example, of people to consume and produce locally, you know, rather than taking imported foods from overseas or from Mexico to consume and produce locally. A lot of that's motivated also by concerns over energy usage and such. So there's a lot
of all those wonderful people preserving the heritage seeds, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah.
a lot of volunteer and free market activity that's countering these giants. And what are the giants? And the giants have basically barriers against entry, things like Codex, things like the FDA drug approval system are all barriers against entry that prevent competition on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And Codex is a very clear example of that. Well, the Natural Solutions Foundation actually has developed a way around Codex. It turns out that the Codex regulations get enforced through the World Trade Organization. And as you know, Ron Paul is very much against the World Trade Organization. And we found a way around it. We call it the Codex Two-Step. It was developed by Jim Turner, who's the president of the Citizens for Health and also an attorney, and by myself. And the Codex Two-Step is basically a way of looking at the Codex rules. It says right in the Codex statute that the guidelines are not mandatory. They are advisory. And so if a country chooses not to adopt a Codex guideline but adopts its own guideline instead and then adopts its own national law based on its own guideline, and there's an opportunity, an attempt to enforce the Codex rules, those rules only get enforced through the World Trade Organization. There would have to be a trade dispute. And what Codex has said, what the World Trade Organization, has said is that the Codex rules are presumed to be the rules in any trade dispute. But if a country has adopted other rules, then the Codex rules are not presumed to be the rules, and the World Trade Organization has to weigh each country's position based on its own rules. And as a result, a country can opt out of Codex. And what we've done is we've created an alternative to the Codex guideline on vitamins and minerals. Why is the Codex guideline on vitamins and minerals so bad? Because it attempts to treat foods, namely dietary supplements and minerals and herbs, as though they were industrial toxins or drugs, subject them to a type of risk analysis that is only used with industrial toxins and drugs, and instead of treating them as foods. And those rules make it almost impossible to have high potency nutrients and to make meaningful claims about those nutrients.
Okay.
So we've created an alternative to that that is a very clear statement of the rights of individuals to truthful information about the foods that they're ingesting. And that alternative vitamin and mineral guideline is available for countries to adopt. And we've also prepared a model dietary supplement statute for countries to adopt that allows very broad free market activities and very broad free market approaches to providing dietary supplements to people. And countries are also able to adopt that.
So
that's what we've begun to do. We've begun to offer alternatives to the monopolies.
Right. And it's wonderful that that's coming from the private sector and from individuals who are both seeing market opportunity as well as volunteering to secure our rights through their volunteer efforts. But no, it can come from, well, it can come from certain politicians and where we're...
I'm going to consider Ron Paul a politician. I consider him a force of nature almost, as I've watched his career over the years.
I understand the distinction that needs to be made absolutely clear on that. However, this is where perhaps government does have a role to play. We do have legislation before
right.
Congress, the Health Freedom Protection Act, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is H.R. 2117, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you about that.
Please do.
Very good.
Tell people how, you know, we've described the problem, we've got a good sense of what's going on and what the issues are. How does the Health Freedom Protection Act help? And then how will the Health Freedom Restoration Act help even more? Because as I understand,
right.
we're upgrading, as it were, the Health Freedom Protection Act to the Health Freedom Restoration Act, and describe that for us.
Let me give you a couple of seconds of background on that. I've been working with the Ron Paul campaign and also with the Ron Paul Legislative Office. The people at the campaign asked me for my input on the health freedom plank that was adopted by the Ron Paul campaign, and I made some suggestions, and I'm happy to say that some of my suggestions were accepted, and in a few instances, the campaign came up with stronger language than I had suggested, I'm really very happy to see them really be willing to push the envelope in a very powerful way, and everyone ought to go to ronpaul2008.com, and they ought to take a look at the issues, pull down the issues, and read the health freedom plank. Very powerful.
Great.
I also am working with Ron Paul's legislative office. He's introduced an important bill, H.R. 2117, the Health Freedom Protection Act, which basically reverses several things the FDA has done in the past couple of years that impact health freedom.
Hold that thought just for a moment. I made another change to the settings here on my end, and I want to see if it might possibly work to get you on camera here.
Since
I'm sure that the audience is tired of looking at my mug on the camera.
Give it a shot.
Let's give them a chance to see if they can see you. I don't know if this is going to work, but I tried this, so we're gonna see if we can get you back up on camera here, and then continue. Let's see, I'm going to have to Skype over to Seth.
Well, while you're doing that, I guess I can keep on talking. Can they hear me?
Yeah, go ahead and keep talking, and then I'll let you know when we're ready with him. Go for it.
One of the several people I know in the attorney in the field who represent vitamin companies and helped with the Health Freedom Protection Act. And what Ron Paul did in that act, or what he does in that bill, is to reverse some of the steps the FDA has taken in the past couple of years, especially in the area of what are called health claims. And it would allow people to make health claims, provided they have scientific evidence to back the claims up, or the claims can have proper disclaimers to let people understand the limits of the evidence. What the FDA wants is what is called significant scientific agreement, which is the level of proof that you have for drugs. Of course, we know that that level of proof doesn't protect. I'm still on there.
Here we go. You're back.
All right. Now you can hear me, right?
Yeah, go for it.
So support that bill. We have a way for you to support it. If you go to globalhealthfreedom.org, that's one long word, globalhealthfreedom.org, and go to the Take Action, you'll see you can click on it, and you can send a message to your member of Congress telling your member of Congress to become a co-sponsor of Ron Paul's bill. And we think that's a really good thing to do. Well, I've been working with his legislative office on that bill, suggesting some changes, because since the bill was introduced, the FDA has engaged in a series of unprecedented interventions that need to be reversed. And so we were working on something called the Health Freedom Restoration Act, which I guess is the Health Freedom Protection Act on steroids. I hope that that will get introduced, and certainly if it does, there will be hundreds of thousands of people supporting it. We've generated well over 100,000 messages to Congress in support of Ron Paul's existing Health Freedom Protection Bill, and that means that every member of Congress has gotten thousands of messages from their own constituents telling them that we want that bill supported. We can introduce even more than that when that anti-complementary and alternative modality guidance got published back in the beginning of the year. We were able to generate, 197,000 people got messages to the FDA against it before the FDA system collapsed. And according to our webmasters, 598,000 people attempted to send messages to the FDA about it. So we know this is a hot-button issue. The type of responses we get are like the responses that Ron Paul gets on the Internet for his campaign for president. It's a powerful response. It shows that there are a lot of people out here who want to restore the Constitution and want to restore the Republic, and that health freedom is one of those issues that's so important to restoring our constitutional
Absolutely.
Rights and returning back to limited constitutional government.
Let's encapsulate for people the essence of what the Health Freedom Protection Act and the Health Freedom Restoration Act will actually do to help us secure our health freedom rights.
The two bills make technical changes in the existing law, some of which seem to be very minor, but which have major consequences. To go into the details of those changes would be to sound like a lawyer, which I try not to do too much.
Okay.
But let us say that they just attempt to they reverse bureaucratic initiatives by the FDA directly, rather than waiting to have to go to court and win a case in the Supreme Court. I have to say, however, the FDA loses at least half the cases that get brought up to the highest federal courts. And so they would lose if the funding were available to sue. Getting Congress to intervene is a much better way to do it, and that's what we want to do. We want to see Congress intervene and protect our rights. The only laws I'm in favor of adopting are laws that protect our rights. Otherwise, there are far too many laws, and Congress adopts far too many laws without ever bothering to read them. You know, so we urge people to go to globalhealthfreedom.org, where they can sign up for our e-alert list, which is a big thing to do. We need a lot more health freedom mouse warriors. Why mouse warriors? Well, because we are all nibbling at the FDA. I have to say that I was down in Washington a couple of months ago. My co-trustees in the Natural Solutions Foundation, retired General Bert Stubblebine and Dr. Rima Labo, have been down there also, and we all come back with the same thought from our conversations with people, the aides to the various members of Congress. There is a real opportunity to take away from the FDA the authority over food health, food safety and claims. It's failing to deal with drug safety. The idea of having food and drugs in the same bureaucracy is not a good idea. It was a mistake in the 1930s when the Congress did it, and Congress needs to reverse that mistake and divest the FDA of its food safety and claims authority. And we think that's a possibility, that there's a broad possibility of a liberal conservative coalition to do that. And we hope that a Ron Paul campaign will help focus people's attention on that sort of possibility.
Well, certainly. You know, we've seen Ron Paul submit legislation such as he has a bill in Congress with regards to the abortion question, which simply by legislation returns the right of the states to make their own decisions with regards to abortion legislatively. And it seems as though Congressman Paul's approach is to, in fact, restore Congress's checks and balances on the executive, because when you're talking FDA, essentially you're talking executive power again, power by decree, power by decree. And Congressman Paul also submitted recently the American Freedom Agenda Act, which the entire theme of that bill, and the entire thrust of that bill, is to restore Congress's role in restore the checks and balances of the legislative branch against the executive branch, so that things are returned to the balance that they should be in, and to roll back the monopolization of power that the executive branch has been taking in these last years. So this does seem to be a consistent theme that Congressman Paul is bringing forth in his legislation. We also need to talk about what we can do to support that. Now, you mentioned that there's the globalhealthfreedom.org, and people can go there to that website, and then they can send an email to their congressmen and their senators to tell them to support the Health Freedom Restoration Act and the Health Freedom Protection Act. Is that correct?
Now, there are a whole series of actions that people can take on that website. That's one of them. Okay. There are a number of others, and we invite people to go and sign up for the e-list, because then they can receive messages. Sometimes Congress is about to do something really dumb, and if we can get 100,000 messages to Congress in a couple of hours, we can stop it.
Yes.
Recently, Congress was doing something really dumb. They were responding to the FDA's failure to protect us from dangerous drugs by increasing the FDA's power, which is a typical move. And we were able, by generating a lot of heat to Congress, make sure that there was a clause added to that FDA, so-called FDA revitalization bill. I called it the FDA Enabling Act. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they added a clause to it at our, the insistence of everybody in the health freedom movement, that specifically exempted dietary supplements from this new bill and its increased FDA powers. As Ron Paul says, and I quote again one of his answers to our 19 questions, no, I favor reducing the power of the FDA. I favor reducing the power of the FDA, and that's exactly what we would expect from a Ron Paul presidency.
So,
and that's why health freedom activists around the country will certainly be, you know, voting for him. Now, the Natural Solutions Foundation is an educational organization. We do not endorse candidates. We do not endorse legislation. We do provide an opportunity for our members to educate the members of Congress about issues, and that's what we're doing.
Sure. As an individual, as Ralph Pusatola, lawyer, individual, I know that you wouldn't.
Let me tell you something. As an individual, after telling myself I would never do this, I registered as a Republican a few weeks ago so I could vote, so I could collect signatures to get Ron Paul on the primary ballot here in New Jersey, and so I could vote in the primary ballot. Many decades ago, I gave up on the Republican Party, but I am willing to give Ron Paul a chance to really bring this crusade to restore the Republic to the mainstream.
So now we're talking about what we can do directly to support
right.
Ron Paul.
Register
and,
as a Republican.
And get him.
Grit your teeth. Register as a Republican. Make sure you vote in the primaries for Ron Paul. That's number one as individuals.
And we can get involved in making his campaign happen and getting him elected. Now, I think the situation that we've described here is a very large, very active community of people who are concerned with health freedom on many different levels. And Ron Paul, as potentially being the champion of this very significant, influential, and active segment of the population, it would seem to me that an organization of health freedom professionals and practitioners for Ron Paul, such an organization would have a dramatic impact on this campaign. And I think we ought to be looking at setting up some kind of a healthcare freedom activists or healthcare freedom practitioners and professionals for Ron Paul.
I agree with you entirely, Stephen. I would love to see that happen. Of course, the foundation I'm a trustee of can't do that, but as an individual, I can. I'm going to be contacting other people in the health freedom movement to see if it's possible to do that. What we really need is an internet site, and we need the ability to come on the air through your site in order to communicate with people. And I certainly think that we can certainly create a groundswell of people supporting Ron Paul over this important issue. And by doing that, we can force the other candidates to address the issue as well.
Absolutely.
And that's something that we want.
I think such an effort would take off overnight and would accrue many important endorsements and the participation of people all over the country. I'm fully confident that will take off very shortly. So let's go ahead and work on that and make that happen in short order. I'm really pleased that you're on board with this, and I also want to have you back on the show on a weekly basis. You can pick the day and the time that's good for you. Come on for a 15-minute health freedom update with Ralph Pusatola. If you're willing to do that, I'd love to have you as my guest commentator on a regular basis.
That'd be great. I'd be happy to do it on a weekly basis. It would be a great way to help build towards the creation of a group of alternative healthcare practitioners and other people in the healthcare world to support Ron Paul.
Absolutely, very exciting. Well, and of course we'll work on getting that microphone working for you so that people can see you.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so very much for joining us and coming on the
show.
Thank
you.
Looking forward to the next time. Thanks, folks. That was Ralph Pusatola joining us, someone who has helped Ron Paul put together his plank for the campaign on the issue of health freedom, and also was involved in updating and revising the Health Freedom Protection Act to become the Health Freedom Restoration Act soon. Let's go ahead and play for you a new Ron Paul commercial. It's a 30-second spot. And we'll play this for you. New Ron Paul commercial.
I'm Ron Paul, and I'm the only presidential candidate who will bring our troops home from Iraq immediately and stop wasteful government spending. But here's something else I care about, and I hope you do too. The war on terror and the growth of big government have had a dangerous side effect, the loss of privacy rights for the American people. Both parties have put their pet schemes ahead of our rights. Not me. As president, I won't stand for it. No national ID card, no invasion of privacy. I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Okay, so there is a short 30-second commercial from the Ron Paul campaign. Frankly, I like that better than the other commercials that I've seen so far. I like the fact that he's bringing up the issue of the national ID card and our freedoms in this country. And I just think that technically the ad could be better, a higher quality. The photography isn't great, and something is wrong with the lighting. Just the way he looks, it just doesn't look right. But it's certainly better in content than in presentation than the other ones that I've seen. Today, the Mukasey was confirmed as our new Attorney General in the Senate. And you may recall that Mr. Mukasey had refused to define waterboarding as torture. Waterboarding, of course, being the practice where one is strapped to a board, immersed upside down in a body of water, held there until the point of nearly drowning, and then pulled out, allowed to gasp for air, and then plunged back in again repeatedly. The Bush administration and apparently our new Attorney General refused to define this as torture. And we have a very interesting piece here from Keith Olbermann, and I'm going to have to play that for you. I think it's something worth listening to. He hits many nails directly on the head, and I salute him for going out on the edge here. We can only hope that Mr. Olbermann's words are heard by the people and those in power.
And it requires cynical and simple words to be properly expressed. The presidency of George W. Bush has now duplicity, and it requires cynical and simple words to be properly expressed. The presidency of George W. Bush has now devolved into a criminal conspiracy to cover W. Bush. All the petulancy, all the childish threats, all the blank stare stupidity, all the invocations of World War III, all the sophistic questions about which terrorist attacks we wanted him not to stop, all the phony secrets, all the claims of executive privilege, all the stumbling tap dancing of his nominees, all the verbal flatulence of his apologists, all of it is now, after one revelation last week, transparently clear for what it is: the pathetic and desperate manipulation of the government, the refocusing of our entire nation towards keeping this mock president and this unstable vice president and this departed, wildly self-overrating attorney general and all the others from potential prosecution for having approved or ordered the illegal torture of prisoners being held in the name of ours. From potential prosecution is torture, Daniel Levin was to write. Daniel Levin was no theorist and no protester. He was no troublemaking politician. He was no table-pounding commentator. A bravery can usually be scared or bought off. Charged, as you heard in the story from ABC News last Friday, with assessing the relative... in the Pandora's box that is the Orwell-worthy euphemism enhanced interrogation, Mr. Levin decided that the simplest and the most honest way to evaluate them was to have them enacted upon himself. Daniel Levin took himself to a military base and let himself be waterboarded. Mr. Bush, ever done anything that personally courageous? Perhaps when you've gone to Walter Reed and teared up over the maimed servicemen, and then gone back to the White House and confirmed and determined that there would be more maimed servicemen? Has it been that kind of personal courage, Mr. Bush, when you've spoken of American triumphs and the triumph of freedom and sacrifice of your own popularity for the sake of our safety, and then permitted others to fire or discredit or destroy anybody who disagreed with you, whether they were your own generals or Max Cleland or Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame or Daniel Levin? Daniel Levin should have a statue in his honor in Washington right now. Instead, he was forced out as acting assistant attorney general nearly 3 years ago because he had the guts to do what George Bush could not do in a million years, actually put himself at risk for the sake of his country, for the sake of what is right. And they waterboarded him. And he wrote that even though he knew those doing it meant him no harm, and he knew they would rescue him at the instant of the slightest distress, and he knew he would not die, still with all that reassurance, he could not stop the terror screaming from inside of him, could not quell the horror, could not convince that which is at the core of each of us, the entity who exists behind all the embellishments we strap to ourselves, like purpose and name and family and love. He could not convince his being that he wasn't drowning. Waterboarding, he said, is torture. Legally, it is torture. Practically, it is torture. Ethically, it is torture. And he wrote it down. Wrote it down somewhere where it could be contrasted with the words of this country's 43rd president. The United States of America does not torture. Made you into a liar, Mr. Bush. Made you into, if anybody had the guts to pursue it, a criminal, Mr. Bush. Waterboarding had already been used on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and a couple of other men none of us really care about, except, sir, for the one detail you had forgotten, that there are rules. And even if we just make up these rules, this country observes them anyway and selected to decide whether or not waterboarding really was torture, had decided, and not in some phony academic fashion, nor while wearing the one selected to decide whether or not waterboarding really was torture, had decided, and not in some phony academic attire of flight suit and helmet. He had put his money, Mr. Bush, where your mouth was. So your sleazy, sycophantic henchman, Mr. Gonzalez, had to have him append an asterisk suggesting his black and white answer wasn't black and white after all, that there might have been a quasi-legal way of torturing people, maybe with an absolute time limit and a physician entitled to stop it, maybe if your administration had ever bothered to set any rules or guidelines. And then when your people realized that even that was too dangerous, Daniel Levin was branded too independent and someone who could not be counted on. In other words, Mr. Bush, somebody you couldn't count on to lie for you. So Levin was fired. Because if it ever got out what he'd concluded and the lengths to which he went to validate that conclusion, anybody who had sanctioned waterboarding and who knows what else, anybody, you yourself, sir, you would have been screwed. And screwed you are. It can't be coincidence that the story of Daniel Levin should emerge from the black hole of this secret society of a presidency just at the conclusion of the unhappy saga of the newest attorney general nominee. Another patriot somewhere listened as Judge Mukasey mumbled like he'd never heard of waterboarding and refused to answer in words that which Daniel Levin answered on a waterboard somewhere in Maryland or Virginia 3 years ago. And this someone also heard George Bush say, "The United States does not torture." And he realized either Mr. Bush was lying or this wasn't the United States of America anymore, and either way, he needed to do something about it. Not in the way Levin needed to do something about it, but in a brave way nonetheless. Then said, enough. Senator Schumer has seen it, reportedly as some kind of puzzle piece in the New York political patronage, then said, enough. Senator Schumer has seen it, reportedly as some kind of puzzle piece in the New York... What Senator Feinstein has seen to justify joining Schumer in rubber-stamping Mukasey, I cannot guess. It is obvious that both these senators should look to the meaning of the story of Daniel Levin and recant their support for Mukasey's confirmation. And they should look from Richard Nixon, a guarantee of a special prosecutor, ultimately a special prosecutor of Richard Nixon, in exchange for their approval of his from Richard Nixon, a guarantee of a special prosecutor. If they could get that out of Nixon, you, before you confirm the president's latest human echo tomorrow, you better be able to get a yes or a no out of Michael Mukasey. Ideally, you should lock this government down financially until a special prosecutor is appointed, or 50 of them. But I'm not holding my breath. The yes or the no on waterboarding would have to suffice. Because remember, if you can't get it, or you won't, with the time between tonight and the next presidential election, likely to be the longest year of our lives, you are leaving this country and all of us to the waterboards, symbolic and otherwise, of George W. Bush. Ultimately, Mr. Bush, the real question isn't who approved the waterboarding of this fiend, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and two others. It is, why were they waterboarded? Study after study, for generation after generation, sir, has confirmed that torture gets people to talk, torture gets people to plead, torture gets people to break, but torture does not get them to tell the truth. Of course, Mr. Bush, this isn't a problem, is it, if you don't care if the terrorist plots they tell you about are the truth, or just something to stop the tormentors from drowning them? If, say, a president simply needed a constant supply of terrorist threats to keep the country scared, if, say, he needed phony plots to play hero during and to boast about interrupting and to use to distract people from the threat he did not interrupt, if, say, he realized that even terrorized people still need good ghost stories before they will let a president pillage the Constitution. Well, heck, Mr. Bush, who better to dream them up for you than an actual terrorist? He'll tell you everything he ever fantasized doing in his most horrific of daydreams, his equivalent of the day you flew onto the deck of the Lincoln to explain you'd won in Iraq. Now, if that's what this is all about, you tortured not because you're stupid and you think that torture produces confession, but that you tortured because you're smart enough to know it produces really authentic-sounding fiction, well, then, you're going to need all the lawyers you can find, because that crime wouldn't just mean impeachment, would it, sir? That crime would mean George W. Bush is going to prison. Thus, the master tumblers turn, and the lock yields, and the hidden explanations can all be perceived in their exact proportions and in their exact progressions. Daniel Levin's eminently practical, eminently logical, eminently patriotic way of testing the legality of waterboarding had to vanish, and him with it. Thus, Alberto Gonzalez has to use that brain that sounds like an old car trying to start on a freezing morning to undo 8 centuries of the forward march of law and government. Thus, Dick Cheney has to ridiculously assert that confirming we do or do not use any particular interrogation technique would somehow help the terrorists. Thus, Michael Mukasey, on the eve of the vote that will make him the high priest of the law of this land, cannot and must not answer a question, nor even hint that he's thought about a question, which merely concerns the theoretical definition of waterboarding as torture. Because that he's thought about a question, that he's thought about a question, which merely concerns the theoretical definition of waterboarding as torture. Because, Mr. Bush, in the 7 years of exploitation of tragedy for political gain in this country's history, and then to the giddying prospect that maybe exploitation of tragedy for political gain in this country's history, and then to the giddying prospect that maybe you could do what the military fanatics did in Japan. This frightful plan is ending with an unexpected crash. The shocking reality that no matter how thoroughly you frightful plan is ending with an unexpected crash. The shocking reality that no matter how thoroughly you might try to extinguish them, Mr. Bush, how thoroughly you might try to brand this country to its righteous standards and to its rightful owners, the people. This country to its righteous standards and to its rightful owners, the people.
Congressman in Washington who votes no more than anyone, and that's because the Constitution is his guide. His eyes are bright with integrity, he's only there for you and me. He's known both far and wide as Ron Paul. Let's stand. strong, his message clear. The powers that be are terrified, afraid he'll up and spoil their plans. The people will finally understand. Their mamas ought to tan their hides. Run, Paul! Let's stay. Doctor, he got his start helping folks with his healing art. 4,000 babies with his own hands. He knows the human condition well. Oh, the stories he could tell. His knowledge and wisdom stands. Run! Choice for number one. He resonates in our hearts and minds. His message rings loud and clear. Hope for America is here, and hope for all mankind.
Run, Paul! Let's stand. Let's stay.